As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Out of Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, probably not the cheeriest episode we'll record this season, TBH. It finished 11-2, 10-2 as Burnley battled and Blues blundered. Man United visit next. We'll preview it. Elsewhere, the women lose the League Cup final in the 116th minute and everybody's really quite cross. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Out of Cobham. We're back with you, bank holiday or not, gang, to talk all things Chelsea. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by a couple of April Fools. Hello, Simon Johnson.
Oh, the biggest fool to start off with. Yes, hello.
Dom Fifield's back with us too. Yeah, okay, Dom?
I'm very well, thanks, Matt. How are you?
Absolutely loving all this brilliant banter from big companies on social media with their April Fools jokes. It just never gets tiresome, does it? Like watching Chelsea over the last two seasons. We better get on with it. We've got loads to get through today. I wanted some premature adjudications, if you'd be so kind. Simon, you were on hand at Stamford Bridge, so I'm guessing yours is going to come from Saturday's game.
Yes, to a degree. Let's just say I'd rather have seen Ian Mattson play for Chelsea than for Borussia Dortmund, and vice versa with Mark Cucurella. I think it should have been the other way around.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are asking that question now as to why he was let go. Dom, have you got one for us?
Burnley to finish above Luton Town in the Premier League table.
Ooh, that is spicy. That might not be good news for my lot because it's Burnley Forest on the last day of the season. But the battle at the bottom is certainly looking a lot more interesting than maybe we thought it would be. Luckily, Chelsea don't quite have to concern themselves with that. Mine would be, it's time to get Aggie Beaver Jones into the team a little bit more. Particularly, she could have come off the bench a bit earlier in the final on Sunday and maybe changed things. But who am I to tell Emma Hayes what to do? Let's get to the men's first team first. It finished Chelsea 2, Burnley 2 on Saturday.
Swung in towards O'Shea. Oh, and they've done it again! It's Darrow O'Shea for Burnley. They will not lie down.
And where would we be without Cole Palmer? Eh? Probably closer to Burnley in the table. The Clarets played with 10 men for over half the game, but they were left feeling rueful that they didn't leave with 3 points. Here's what Simon thought in the stadium at full time.
Chelsea 2, Burnley 2. The finals went a few minutes ago and the ground is already empty, or pretty much empty. Chelsea fans showing the kind of speed that Mudryk demonstrated quite a lot of this game, actually. Hastily making their exit to the nearby local establishments to perhaps drink away their misery, or perhaps just head home and think of something else better to do. But yeah, this is an embarrassing result for Chelsea, dropping 2 points against relegation threatened Burnley. We're down to 10 men from the 40th minute. Controversial second yellow and penalty given against Asignon for his challenge on Mudryk. But unfortunately, Chelsea just can't defend. This is the fifth game in a row they have conceded two goals in a match. And they could have actually conceded more. They looked bad at the back for every time Burnley came forward. in both halves. And yes, Chelsea had a number of shots on goal themselves and still argue should have perhaps won the game, but we just saw the same old with Chelsea, didn't we? Poor at both ends. And this is not good for Pochettino in his laughable comments before the match in his press conference about data showing that Chelsea should be or could be fourth in the table. Just painfully exposed by the kind of performance that shows just why they are where they are, which is a mid-table team. Don't take the chances and concede far too many chances to their opposition. You know, are we getting to the stage now where Chelsea should give up on any hopes of qualifying for Europe for a top seven finish? It feels that way. But I think what we can say is at least the fans, on the whole, stood by the team, unlike a couple of weeks ago against Leicester. Yes, there are signs of unrest at times, some groans with a mid-hit shot or pass. Nicholas Jackson, you know, when he didn't take a chance, inevitably came under a bit of stick. But conversely, they were still chanting Chelsea, Chelsea in injury time. Raheem Sterling was applauded and cheered on when he came on as a substitute in the second half. So I think Chelsea fans try to sort of make amends themselves for their public outcry against Leicester, but unfortunately the players didn't repay them with the result. And very disappointing. It just feels increasingly like FA Cup or bust. They're certainly going to have to defend a lot better than this against Manchester City at Wembley and hope of beating them.
An embarrassing result, Simon. I think that's a fair take, right? But it would have been even worse had J. Rodriguez managed to stick that chance away right at the end.
Yeah, great header. It didn't surprise me. I mean, the thing is that even in the few minutes before half-time, after Asignon was sent off, Burnley still looked a threat. And I tweeted as much during the interval that Chelsea still looked like conceding against 10 men. And so it proved in the second half. In a way, I think the draw was the fair result because Chelsea did have a host of chances themselves. I mean, 33 shots on goal. And Raheem Sterling, don't forget, made a bit more of a mess of his header than Rodriguez. He didn't even hit the target from a few yards out. But I was really impressed with Burnley. I've seen Burnley play at Stamford Bridge many times over the years, particularly in the Sean Dyche era. And they would be gritty and sort of relying on set pieces and quite ugly to watch. Now, this Burnley still relied on set pieces, or let's just say Chelsea's inefficiency to defend them. Where is that set piece coach, by the way? Mm-hmm. Need him in ASAP. But they played attacking football. They went at Chelsea whenever they could, playing some nice football. So, yeah, I was really impressed with Burnley. And Chelsea just feels, as I said in my voice note, a case of same old, just not good enough at either end of the pitch.
Yeah, Simon's latest piece for The Athletic is analysing if Chelsea are any further on a year later from sacking Graham Potter. Dom, I think the simple conclusion is that they're not really, right?
Well, they've got a slightly different team. But yeah, really, the metrics didn't. I didn't think the metrics told us that much. There's obviously more entertaining games, but that's not what the Chelsea partisans will be after. They want victories and convincing ones at that, and they're not getting them. I'm slightly different to Si on this. I mean, I was surprised at this result because I watched Burnley the other day, equally a Burnley team that was reduced to 10 pretty early on, and although they defended ruggedly enough, they did not have an attacking threat in them at all. So it makes me wonder, what are Chelsea doing that are inviting teams onto them? I think that's staggering. The only two teams have scored fewer goals than Burnley in the Premier League this season, Everton and Sheffield United. And it amazes me that they created as many chances as they did. I know Chelsea had 412 shots at goal or whatever it was, 33, but even allowing Burnley to get 13 off, what is going on here? That level of chaos does not suggest progress. And I know you can look at a young-ish pair of centre halves and a young back line and arguably a makeshift back line with a goalkeeper that's in his first Premier League season. You can use them all as mitigating factors, but that Burnley team are a Championship team at best. I mean, it's to concede that many opportunities to them when they've got 10 men, beggars belief, really.
Simon, you mentioned Mauricio Pochettino's pre-match comments, which didn't look great after this game, about how Chelsea could be fourth in the table if the stats had gone their way, specifically XG, I think it was, wasn't it? The post-match comments was what you focused on in your piece. We didn't show the capacity, the energy, the hunger, the minimum to compete in the Premier League. Is this a bit of a tone shift from the Chelsea head coach, maybe looking to shift the blame on to the players and away from him?
Well, first of all, to give you a bit of context of that exchange, there was this really awkward moment when it happens every week, you know, with the start of a press conference. No one wants to ask the first question. It's really weird. It's like everyone sort of goes quiet. And so, and the same happened on Saturday. And
you're all looking around for Gary Cottrell.
Yeah.
You know that he'll dive in.
I don't know why. There should be like a weekly. So what did you make of that? Because it always starts with a very gentle loosener. If you want your cricket analogy, you know, a loosener from the pavilion end, you just get your arm over. It's not the most convincing delivery you'll ever see. I'll start with a cricket analogy. I've probably lost quite a few people. So anyway, so Mauricio sits down and no one's asked the first question. And the press officer goes, Simon. And as the Athletic, we tend to ask sort of, well, we like to think we'll ask some more probing kind of question or something. So I was in this really, the classic loosener. I went, disappointing result. It was 2 points dropped, right? I mean, real Jeremy Paxman, if you're living in the UK and remember Question Time, etc. Not Question Time, Newsnight, sorry, kind of question. And it proceeded a good 4 minutes answer. I mean, it was it's the best answer to a gentle loosener that I think I can remember. He just went off on one. He was very angry. You could see in his face. And I particularly liked it reminded me a bit of Mourinho, where he didn't talk about Chelsea lacking, can I say it on the podcast? Balls. He pointed to his head and his heart. And then he said, we may have the legs, but if you don't have this or that, which I thought was quite damning. So anyway, his answer finishes, and inevitably, this is sort of manna from heaven for the reporters, and was followed up instantly. He said, you normally defend your team. What, like, you're normally the biggest defender of the team. What's different about today? And you could almost sort of see the kind of, better pretend that I haven't just said all that. And he said, I am defending my team, which instantly made me think, well, funny way of showing it. And then he quickly went, it's all of us. It's all of us. And suddenly trying to say we're all responsible for what happened. But I think his first answer was the honest one. He was going at his players. And I can understand his frustration. I think people will sort of say, yes, well, this is more the same in terms of the way Chelsea are organised, etc. And that's down to you. Are you really having an impact on how Chelsea is set up? But he was particularly frustrated at how bad Chelsea were without the ball. Touching on Dom's point in terms of why they're so bad defensively against Burnley, he just said they lack the intensity of what it takes to play in the Premier League. And he was, you have to say, he was right. You never really felt that Burnley had one less player on the pitch, which is not a very glowing endorsement of how Chelsea played.
What was the implication that there was a complacency there then? They're playing a team ensconced in the bottom three, reduced down to 10 men, and they just assumed that the result would follow. Is that the conclusion you drew?
It's hard to know exactly what he meant, whether it was complacency or... He was certainly questioning their desire, I think, to defend, that they lacked the energy to go with their men. He's essentially saying it was too easy for Burnley. He talks about, I'm trying to remember whether he said it was an incident in the first half. He said, because it was such a long rant, you know, sort of trying to follow everything he was saying. But he said there was an incident where the goalkeeper just passed it out, and then within a few passes, they were in at our goal. And he was just going, this is all too easy. Now, perhaps you could sort of, can you throw in the caveat of international break, players being tired? For example, Enzo Fernandez got back extremely late from Argentina. I think he got back the day before and he played the full game. Malo Gusto going down injured didn't help. But it feels a bit like excuses, really. If you, you know, many Chelsea sides have had to put up with international breaks and the impact it has on the players' legs and so on. So, whereas this has been the story of all season, you know, Chelsea not taking their chances and being very too easy to score against. I'll let Dom start doing some talking in a minute.
I find the whole thing utterly baffling because, yeah. I mean, Chelsea have lost two league games since Christmas Eve. And yeah, it was utterly wasteful on Saturday and a completely missed opportunity. But actually, their run isn't that bad. They got picked apart on the counter-attack by Wolves at home. They got battered at Liverpool, but other teams are battered at Liverpool. And Liverpool are a better team than Chelsea's. But it's got to the stage of the season, though, where you're sort of looking at it and thinking, how do I put my finger on where Chelsea are now? What are they? What are they trying to become? And the biggest alarm bell for me is, what happens if Chelsea get beaten in the FA Cup semi-final by Manchester City, which you'd have to suggest is likely to happen? Do the wheels then completely fall off? If there's question marks over mentality, according to Pochettino, does this group have it in them to finish the season with a bit of momentum to try and qualify for Europe via the league position? Or does it do what it did last season, or what the group did last season, and completely disintegrate, form, absolutely desert them, and they end up being utterly embarrassed? Because I know for Chelsea supporters, it's difficult to, you know, to watch them draw at home to Burnley and even concede the number of goals that they have, you know, two in the last, you know, each of the last five games against pretty substandard opposition, really. But if you take them as a group that is developing and a young group that's learning all the time, then I suppose you're going to get periods of teething troubles. But you know, what are they trying to be? What is it? That's where the real test of Pochettino will be. Is, you know, how does he galvanise a group that you know, at the risk of their season suddenly unravelling after an FA Cup elimination when there's potentially nothing else to play for? And maybe that's where the real decision making will be made in the hierarchy over the head coach's position. But I find it all very, very, it's a very odd situation at the moment. It really is, because every other club will look at it and think, two defeats since Christmas Eve, I'd take that. I'd take that in a heartbeat, but not this lot.
I think it's one home defeat, the Wolves one you're talking about, in the last 14 or 15 games. I mean, there's quite a few draws in there, and costly ones like Saturdays, but still that actually does show some consistency, doesn't it? But then you look at the league table and you go, well, they're not going anywhere.
There can be an impatience, can't there? And I understand that. You know, you want to be two steps further ahead. You want them to eradicate these errors and have less inconsistency in their game and to put teams like Burnley away. But they're not at that situation. They're not in that position at the moment. And yeah, I don't know. It feels as if everything's sort of teetering on the brink a bit. But actually, it shouldn't be. If you look at the results, it really shouldn't be. But the situation is so tense and could really go either way. Actually, it's more likely to go one way than the other, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the lack of progress up the table, isn't it? Which is the key thing, I think. I also think maybe there'd be a bit more patience if, say, they'd signed Fernandes and Caicedo for 50 million rather than 100 million. And maybe the expectation would be a little lower. Of course, we had loads of interaction from you. We appreciate it very much, listener, at SO Common Pod, the place to follow us on X/Twitter. Let's run through a couple of them. Neil says there's no excuse for the events in that game. Another halftime capitulation and Gusto's blown hamstring epitomizes what is a season of ineptitude. Luke said average players making below average decisions and executing poorly, brain dead defending. I don't know how big the goals are at Cobham, but looking at how we shoot from outside the box, they must be slightly taller than at the Bridge. Joseph, real concern is inability to keep players healthy. Dr. Doolittle added something similar. We need to regroup over the summer, make some harsh decisions. It's not good enough in all aspects at the moment. The medical department also needs full auditing, which I'm taking as Dr. Doolittle pitching for a role in the medical department. Here's one, Simon, for you, which is a good point. It's a shame that I can't pronounce the person who's got in touch his name. I think it's Dainjo. So apologies if I've got that wrong. D-A-I-G-N-G-O. If Cassaday doesn't warrant minutes against Burnley with midfielders gas from international travel, then what was the point of recalling him?
I think he summed it up perfectly, to be honest. And of course, I've already written about this fairly recently. So utterly, utterly bizarre. I mean, this thing about Pochettino, he moans about fatigue, for example, with his players, but doesn't actually play sort of some youngsters, or at least sort of give them 20 minutes or whatever to give them a break. A player like Cassidy, is he the finished article? No, but I think he could have contributed a lot more than he has done in the few months since he's been back from Leicester. And conversely, Leicester have fallen off a cliff. Not saying that Cassidy is the sole reason, obviously, but you can imagine he would have played a lot for Leicester over the last few months. It's just another example of the confused thinking. It feels like he's just been brought in to make up the numbers because there were some injury issues, but there was no genuine intention to play him unless the situation got desperate. And a few sort of token last late sub roles, they will argue, oh, he's benefiting from being around the camp and all that nonsense, but no, he'd been better off playing in the Championship, trying to get Leicester promoted and experiencing the pressure of that situation rather than watching Chelsea continue to flatter to deceive from the dugout.
So he was an unused sub. We also had Turiainen and Achapong on the bench again, which raised a few eyebrows too. The other thing, Dom, that's got people talking is Chelsea's performances from one half to another. Darren says, very troubling how we either start poorly or come out for the second half completely off where we should be. What is the half-time messaging in a season of inconsistency? That's been one of the consistents. Kevin, on the same theme, what's going on after the half-time break? Seriously, can we please look at the data? Points lost, leads thrown away, goals conceded in the second half. Shambolic. Maybe this speaks to what you were talking about earlier, Dom, in terms of a bit of complacency, especially when Burnley go down to 10 men. But that's not really acceptable, is it, from professional athletes?
No, of course it's not. No, absolutely not. It wouldn't matter what level or what your aspirations are. As a Premier League team and as Premier League players, you can't let standards slip from half to half. You can't take your foot off the gas. You can't allow any kind of complacency to creep in at all. That's inexcusable. That would be what winds the fans up. If they perceive that, then you've lost them, because that's almost like the worst crime you can commit. I wonder whether it's more about inexperience possibly and youth around the pitch and that element of it, unable to manage a game properly on field. I mean, you can criticize the head coach for his in-game decisions. And I know it's from the comments under Simon's piece today that there are a lot of people suggesting that they're unconvinced by Pochettino's substitutions and in-game management. But you have to have players who can make decisions and adapt to the game situation on the field as well. And you learn that as you go along, but maybe having too many with a certain level of experience on the pitch at one time and going back to that oft-trumpeted accusation that there aren't that many leaders in this Chelsea team, maybe that comes into it as well. But you're right. I mean, there is a disparity there between the performances in each half. And Liam wrote about it a few weeks back in a piece. I don't think it's down to a team talk. I don't think the manager's saying, oh, don't worry, you can take your foot off the gas and you can calm down. That's just not happening. But it's something is not right. It's not clicking. And it probably usually boils down to either inexperience and brittle confidence, and in Chelsea's case, a bit of both, probably.
One of the themes we keep coming back to on this pod, Simon, seems to be recruitment. I just wonder if maybe goalkeeper is one of those areas where Chelsea could have done a bit better. I don't want to pile in on Georgia Petrovic because this was his 13th game in the Premier League, but I was watching the highlights with my five-year-old who doesn't like football, and he said, isn't the Chelsea goalie supposed to stop the ball from going in? That was not very good from him. But the second
should write for The Athletic with analysis like that.
It's people words.
Yeah, I mean, the goalkeeper situation, inevitably it was talked about in the press room before Pochettino walked in. And I think Petrovic has definitely been elevated above his level in terms of how he's been perceived, because he's better than Robert Sanchez. But I don't think any one of us were under the impression he was at the level of Petr Cech or Thibaut Courtois, which is the high standard Chelsea have set in the past for goalkeepers. I wrote a piece, if you remember, after the Arsenal game back in October about about how everyone talks about how Chelsea have never replaced Drogba and Costa. Well, I think Cech and Courtois, as I said in that piece, is the same point. They've never been able to, and they're hard guys to replace. I mean, we're talking about two of the best goalkeepers that Chelsea have ever had. So in Cech's case, probably the best. The previous regime wasted a ridiculous amount of money on Kepa, who can't even play for Real Madrid now. He's lost his place for them, even with Courtois being injured. So will it be addressed in the summer?
Kepa might be back, mightn't he? I mean, that's got to be a possibility.
Well, yeah, but they will obviously try and find a way to get rid of him for good. He'll only have 1 year left on his contract, and it'll be a challenge because of the salary he's on. I mean, the Real Madrid scenario was a lucky break in many ways because, of course, he only got that loan because of Thibaut Courtois suffering a serious knee injury. Will they be able to find another club? I wonder if there's going to be some kind of agreement where Chelsea pays some of his wages and he sees out his contract on loan somewhere else. But at the same time, they want to raise money for as has been well documented, for PSR and all that. So it'll be a hard one to just let out the door for nothing. But even if Kepa goes, you're left with Sanchez and Petrovic. What do you do? I mean, I still like Petrovic. That was his first glaring error, from what I can recall. Maybe there's been some shots he could have done a bit better with, but in terms of real howlers, that was a bad one. But it's too simple as well to just point the finger at him for that goal. I mean, Chelsea were hopeless in the air. And as we saw with Rodriguez later on, you know, free header. It just felt like free header after free header. So therefore, you have to question, one, again, how Chelsea set themselves up set-piece-wise. And, of course, this is why they're hiring a set-piece specialist from Brentford. But also the centre-back pairing. Was that the right call? I expected to see Thiago Silva play on Saturday. He's been out for quite a while. Firstly, through injury. Secondly, clearly through selection. And I just felt Saturday, even against Burnley, which is probably a damning indictment on this Chelsea squad, that Chelsea needed Silva's leadership. And especially when you saw how they were playing against 10 men, they needed someone to organise them. And Badiashile, was he a flash in the pan after he joined in January last year? Because he looked so good. But this year he's had an absolute shocker. He looks way off. And Axel Disasi, disastrously. I hadn't been impressed with him for quite a while. Then he had that sort of golden couple of weeks, the stage dive at Palace, which was arguably my non-football highlight of the season because it was so funny.
The blockathon at the Etihad as well.
But his performance, more importantly, his performance at Man City was, I went, oh, hang on, maybe I've got it wrong. But unfortunately, since then, he's dipped back to the level I felt he was at before. And you question recruitment. I question how Chelsea have ended up with Monaco's centre-back pairing. Because, no offence to Monaco, but they're not a great side in Liga. So, you know, to have two centre-backs now playing for Chelsea, which is a much higher level, I think question marks have to be asked about that.
Well, that's the other dilemma, isn't it? Because we're saying that recruitment is an issue. It has been. These are the guys that are going to instigate the summer recruitment as well. So are we just going to have more of the same? And does this club need another radical overhaul of the playing stuff? I mean, it may require one in terms of PSR, possibly. We don't know. I mean, they sound pretty confident they're not going to have issues with PSR. And indeed, the rules may change in the near future anyway. Are we actually sitting here saying that Chelsea need to have another radical summer of chopping and changing with all the personnel? I mean, surely some of this season's issues have cropped up because there was so much of an overhaul, so much radical change at the club. It's almost like crying out for some level of stability and some level of, right, well, let's let these guys breathe a bit and have another pre-season and then take it on. If we have the faith that they've got the potential to develop into very good players for the future, for this club's future, then you stick with them. Then you pin your colours to the mast and say, look, these are the guys that are going to take the Chelsea forward. And if they instigate instead another round of sweeping changes in the summer, then that's almost an admission that, yeah, we got it completely wrong again last summer, combined to the summer of 22 as well. I think it would just add to the sense of chaos and a lack of focus, and I think would erode belief in what little belief there is in the structure and in the hierarchy even more.
Stick a third sporting director in, that might help. Right, let's take a little pause here. When we come back, we'll talk about the Man United game.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right, so we've got some selection dilemmas for this one then, Simon. We're going to assume that Malo Gusto's not going to be able to play. You've mentioned Thiago Silva. I guess this increases the likelihood of him coming into the team here and Dizazi going to right back if Gusto's not available.
Possibly, because I was having a chat with someone post-match already about this. So, yeah, I was already on your wavelength, Matt. What did Chelsea do right back-wise? Yeah, because we were discussing Alfie Gilchrist, for example, who came late on Saturday, and essentially saying, you know, good lad, you know, it's great to see him getting some minutes, but don't start him on Thursday night because it wouldn't be fair to him. You know, I don't think he's ready for that.
And he's not a right back, let's not forget.
Well, yeah, that as well. Although I think he has played there this season. But I would go with, given that he clearly was quite close to making the squad, despite being ruled out categorically by Chelsea last week, I think Chalobah's got a chance of being fit for this. He was back in training. You know, Chelsea did their classic sort of injury list ahead of the press conference on Thursday, and then almost sort of 24, 36 hours later, they posted another update and Chalobah was back in training already. So I think if he's fit, then you play Chalobah right back. Disasi, despite my concerns, plays inside him. And yes, I would play Silva instead of Badiashile. Should have said Badiashile. That was his first start since February. So nearly 2 months. So it perhaps also explains why he wasn't good. But I think after that, after the way that pair struggled, I think you have to bring Silva back in. But it feels, is this Pochettino essentially already saying, and we've discussed about Silva before, that he wants to move on from him? He's clearly, this is his last season at Chelsea, and you have to look to the future. But I think you have to look to the present too. Chelsea need a good result against Manchester United. They can't seem to beat them in the league, can't seem to perform against them in the league. I had the misfortune of being up there in December, I think it was early December, to see Manchester United actually have a really easy victory against Chelsea. And when you think about how poor Manchester United have been all season, it was a damning indictment on Chelsea.
It's the Derby della underwhelming faded giants, really, this, Dom, isn't it? I think Manchester United coming into it, having got a point that they didn't really deserve in West London on Saturday night against Brentford... I was going to say they're in similar positions, the two clubs and the two coaches, aren't they? And that they're trying to find out what they are. And it seems like the coach is always under pressure. But United are sixth in the table. I mean, that's not where they want to be, but it's a darn sight higher than where Chelsea are. Is there more pressure and expectation around Chelsea or United in this fixture?
Well, United are going for European qualification very much. I think they'll probably retain vague, very vague aspirations of reaching the Champions League, particularly if a fifth place can be secured for England. But they're 8 points shy of Spurs at the moment, so it does look a bit unlikely. In terms of pressure, I mean, Ten Hag wasn't... I mean, Ineos have now bought into United. They're not owners of the club, but they have a big say in terms of football operations. Ineos did not appoint Erik ten Hag. That would make Erik ten Hag vulnerable, I would suggest, if they have a poor end to the season in particular. But actually, when you're right, when you look at the two records, some of those draws, United have lost more games than Chelsea in the league, but some of the draws that Chelsea have had, United have been winning those matches narrowly, and therefore that's where I think the 8 point difference between the teams is at the moment. I watched that Brentford game. It was remarkable how United escaped with a point from that. And indeed, Mason Mount probably should have won it for them with his very, very, very late goal. And then they finally go at the other end, Brentford, and put their 31st shot of the game went in. But 85 touches in the United box for Brentford in that match. I mean, absolutely the third most since Opta started recording that statistic in the Premier League. Absolutely staggering. Well, staggeringly inept performance from United in so many ways, other than the sort of last-ditch defending, really. They were absolutely outclassed. So you look at them and you think, well, they're really, really vulnerable. But then I thought that of Burnley going to Stamford Bridge. I thought Chelsea against Burnley would be a complete walkover, and it didn't prove that way at all. And as Simon says, Chelsea's record against United is pretty shaky. Mason Mount's coming back to Stamford Bridge. It's almost written in the stars, isn't it, say?
I was going to say, what minute does he score in? November 2017, by the way, was the last time Chelsea beat United in the Premier League. Mount probably won't start, Simon. I mean, we'll wait and see on that one. What kind of reception do you think he'll get if and when we see him?
It's going to be quite interesting, you know, whether Mount is seen as some form of protest against the hierarchy, because you're talking about the Chelsea homegrown, the guy that should have been Chelsea's man for 10 years, got the club DNA all over him. And of course, one train of thought, and certainly one version of events of how he ended up leaving the club, was that he was essentially sacrificed to help with PSR and to sort of bring money into the club. Of course, the other version, which could lead to him getting some grief on Thursday night, is that he angled for a move away, a big payday away, during his worst campaign for Chelsea when they were struggling, having their worst season for many a year, and ended up joining not a traditional old rival, but a rival nevertheless. And of course, there was the manner of his departure PR-wise was very, very clumsily handled. The video that was shown that he recorded wasn't the best, particularly when he had one hair colour. And then another.
It's remarkable, isn't it, when you think about it?
It was
absolutely staggering.
I mean, the argument was that, and I do believe it, that he basically changed his hair colour in the space of 24, 48 hours because he didn't want that hair colour for the official photograph. But you can see from Chelsea fans' perspective, they're going, well, this feels like it was recorded months ago and that it wasn't very sincere. Knowing Mason Mount, well, I don't know him, but we're not like we're best buds hanging out in Manchester, but sort of hearing about the kind of character he is, I think he was genuinely gutted to leave and felt like he had no choice but to leave. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what kind of reception he gets. Is it going to be kind of the lover scorned kind of thing? Or, oh, actually, I quite like my ex, and it reminds me of Champions League nights. Sorry, am I talking personal now?
No word. We can get insight into your life here.
Hey, look, we all have exes that you sometimes think about and you go, oh, yes, times were great then. My wife's
good luck with your marriage
year.
After this.
Yeah, she's left the house. Don't want to get into more trouble. And I'll stop talking before I dig myself a bigger hole.
All right, so Lucy's clipped that up. She sent it to Mrs. Johnson via WeTransfer, and we will await the fallout on Friday's show.
Next podcast, I'll be in some bedsit, won't I, you know?
I think you've hit the nail on the head, though, Simon. He might be used, given the current circumstance that Chelsea are in, as a stick to beat the new regime with. He's a two-time Chelsea Player of the Year, though, and he contributed a lot at all levels of the club while he was here. So hopefully he gets a bit of respect for that.
Yeah, I totally endorse that. I hope he gets a good reception. You know, I think he deserves it. But any Champions League winner from 2021... I think deserves to be remembered fondly. You know, even Kai Havertz is trying to win a title for Arsenal. Yeah, I think there should be that level of respect. You know, if the 2012 group are revered full time, then the 2021 group should be as well.
Yep, scored in the semi against Real Madrid at Stamford Bridge, didn't he? Scored in the quarter final as well. Okay. That means, because the game is at the ridiculous kickoff time at 8:15 on a Thursday night, that we will be doing our next show on Friday when we will react to that. Right, that's the men's team dealt with. More bad news on the way next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Forward, Australian connection in full force again. It's Blackstone.
Chelsea making an annoying habit of losing League Cup finals. The quadruple dream for the women's team is over. Here's Jessie Parker-Humphreys, who was on hand at Molyneux for the Conti Cup final defeat against Arsenal.
A third consecutive Continental Cup final loss in a row for Chelsea. Emma Hayes' quadruple dream is dead. They lost 1-0 to Arsenal in a bit of a strange game in the end. at Molineux. Steven Blackstenius scored the goal in extra time, an extra time that started under a bit of a weird cloud after Frieda Marnham collapsed off the ball at the end of normal time. I think, understandably, Arsenal found they had a bit more impetus in that extra time as a result, and they pushed on obviously to get the winner. But there will be question marks for Emma Hayes and a couple of her choices that she made within this match. Chelsea only made two substitutes before the 119th minute. Guru Wrighton came on in about the 70th minute, and Katerina Macario came on in extra time. Aki Beaver-Jones was thrown on right at the end after Arsenal scored, and Arsenal made a lot of subs, and it was clear that Arsenal were fresher throughout this game. Chelsea had obviously played a lot more matches than Arsenal as a result of the competitions they're still in, and I think that kind of showed at the end with Arsenal being able to launch a lot of counter-attacks and Chelsea sort of struggling to get back. Hayes in her presser was quite blasé about the schedule and the impact it might have had. She pointed to the chance Lauren James had just before Steena Blackstenius' goal, saying, you know, look, we could have won it there. Would you be talking about that afterwards? I mean, potentially, given the way that, you know, she's put a load more minutes in her key players' legs. Another interesting decision she made was she switched the armbands at half-time. Erin Cuthbert came out as captain in the second half after Niamh Charles had captained in the first half. She says that was pre-planned. She wants them to share these moments together as part of her leadership development for the two. And then finally, it wouldn't be Emma Hayes if there wasn't a little opportunity to catch the headlines for herself. She managed to do that with a push on Jonas Eidevall as he went to shake her hand at the final whistle. She claims that he was being too aggressive. He had a go at Erin Cuthbert. This was all to do with the multi-ball system, believe it or not. Arsenal had wanted to play with a multi-ball and Chelsea had refused, so they played with a single ball. So Eidevall was annoyed when Erin went to get another ball, obviously as Chelsea were pushing to try and find an equaliser. Hayes going in on Eidevall. He does have a little bit of previous when it comes to this, but Eidevall sort of trying to play it down. They certainly have been a fascinating rivalry between the two of them, and I guess this was a fitting final chapter, maybe one of the tensest games we've ever seen play out between the two of them. But for now, Chelsea will have to go back to just looking at the treble that's still on the cards, the FA Cup, the WSL and the Champions League, all still to play for.
So we've got a little update from when Jesse sent us that voice note on that touchline spat, as I am obliged to refer it as, between the two coaches. Emma Hayes said afterwards, "I'm not up for male aggression from the touchline and fronting up to players. For me, that's unacceptable. I was disappointed and I told Jonas that. I don't think it's okay to behave like that. He got a yellow card and probably should have been sent off." To which Eidevall replied, "I think it's very irresponsible behaviour. I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't think it's the truth. It's very irresponsible. I'm very happy for people to listen to what I say and what I do there, and it's nothing out of order." It's a shame that this is the final meeting between them in a way, Simon, because this is a lovely old bit of Ferguson Wenger-esque beef from back in the day, isn't it? But I mean, you kind of get Emma's frustration. Obviously, we don't know the full details of what was said there on the touchline, but it was not a great look and a sour end to a game that Chelsea frankly just didn't play very well in.
Yeah, I was thinking Mourinho, Wenger, because they sort of had a pushing and shoving incident, didn't they? I think it's difficult because we weren't there, you know, right there to hear what was said. But it's very, you open yourself up to claims of hypocrisy if you talk about aggression when you're seen to be aggressive yourself, you know, to push Jonas as Emma did. It wasn't a good look. That, as you say, I mean, that game was broadcast live on the BBC, and it was quite an unseemly incident. But you can also flip it around and go, yeah, kind of like a bit of needle, you know. if you're a bit old school and sometimes you think that the men's team are a bit too nice, yeah, perhaps that's the bad loser in Emma coming out, which just shows how much it hurt. How much she cares, and she must be gutted. I think it's that three Conti Cup final defeats in a row. This is her last season. She must have had ambitions of winning this quadruple, and Chelsea have fallen at the first hurdle. But perhaps as well, there was the frustration of how, like you say, how disappointing Chelsea were generally. Their football wasn't that great. Lauren James, of course, had a great chance to win it, perhaps, but overall, I don't think Chelsea could have too many complaints about the result. But clearly, Emma had complaints about the behaviour of her coaching rival.
Jesse and I were messaging after the game yesterday and wondering whether, in a kind of Jurgen Klopp style, Emma's just a bit knackered. It's been such a long time that she's been at the helm, and it's not coming apart at the seams by any means. But we had that kind of strange comment that she then rode back from on player relationships. We had the incident at the end of this game. Maybe it is the right thing for her to be stepping back and moving into international football, because it's clearly been a really draining experience for her. And obviously, from a Chelsea perspective, what we don't want is to for it to all unravel at the end. Manchester City got on top of the WSL this weekend after they won and Chelsea didn't play. It all piles a lot of pressure onto the next game, which is the FA Cup semi-final away to Man United after the international break.
Yeah, and I think mental fatigue does come into it. There's also, she will be thinking about what happens next as well. And it's not exactly a small move that she's making to go to the other side of the world and coach an international team. I think fatigue as well from the sheer number of games they've had in March. I think it was eight in all competitions. And when you're sort of looking at this pristine record and wanting to win everything that you can possibly compete for, you know, every little slip that your team make, every time those standards aren't quite there, and they weren't on Sunday, risks wrecking that dream, that aspiration, and indeed that proved the case. And maybe that creates its own pressure, and you see signs of strain in the reactions in some of the comments as you referenced there. But I suppose if it was one of the competitions that Chelsea had to sacrifice out of the four, then it would be that one. They'll target the winning the WSL and overhauling this league that City have built this weekend. Champions League is the elusive trophy that for Emma Hayes, so she'll want to secure that this season, which will be a remarkable achievement given the caliber of some of the teams that she's coming up against. If she can manage that, and the FA Cup would be a nice little coup de grace to everything, but the. Yeah, so I mean, if you can't do all because of the strain that it puts on you, then the Conti Cup is the one to lose out on. But yeah, I agree with Si. It wasn't a great look at the end. I do like a bit of aggro, I have to say, between managers, and be a bit hypocritical of me to sit here and say it doesn't add to the intrigue of it all. It's a good story to cover. I'd love to know the ins and outs of Erin Cuthbert's little exchange with Jonas as well on the touchline, and whether it did indeed revolve around the multi-ball system, which seems a bit remarkable, but there you go. But yeah, it added a bit of spice, and I think Chelsea supporters should probably be more reassured than anything else that they've got a manager in the helm for a while yet going for these other trophies who takes defeat that badly.
Yeah, I was just going to emphasize the point that challenging for four trophies is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know. That's why it's basically never done the quadruple in men's or women's football, because it only takes you to like as Dom said, to be slightly off it once, and especially in cup football, and that's it. Now, whether Arsenal also had a bit more motivation, given this is basically probably their only trophy that they can win now because of the gap that there is in the WSL, of course, not in Europe and knocked out of the FA Cup. Obviously, the incident that took place as well, and hopefully Freedom Arnhem makes a swift recovery. It was a horrible moment, particularly if you were at the game either as a teammate, an opposition player, or in the crowd. But it was quite harrowing just having it on the TV, to be honest. But you know, whether that also was a motivational factor, that certainly Arsenal players sort of seemed to talk that way after the game. But I also just not using this as an excuse for Emma's behaviour, but I think it's been forgotten just generally in terms of her mood, perhaps. Don't forget, it's only a few months ago she lost her dad, who she was really close to. And she's had to cope with her grief whilst going for a quadruple. I mean, this is just me talking out loud. Has she had time to actually grieve properly? I remember being at the press conference shortly after it happened, and you could see how emotional she was. So, sometimes we also shouldn't forget the personal, people can be going through some personal stuff, which, again, not excusing but it may explain why perhaps her mood isn't the best.
Yeah, good point. She won't do this because she's a workaholic. But Emma, if you're listening, get yourself on Skyscanner. Get yourself a nice little breakaway for a couple of days. Find some sun. Come back recharged. Beat Man United in the FA Cup semi. And then the WSL run-in could be worse. Let's just put it that way. Got Villa at home, Liverpool away, Bristol City who are on their way down, Spurs and Man United. But sandwiched in between that is the Champions League semi-final, which is scheduled for successive Saturdays on the 20th and 27th of April, going away to Barcelona first. And then what is set to be Emma's final game at Stamford Bridge in the return should be some occasion that. If you'd like to hear more on the game, Jesse's going to join the gang on this week's Full-Time Europe pod, brought to you by The Athletic. There'll be plenty more fallout and discussion too. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, some good news. The under-21s beat Leeds 3-2 in Yorkshire to progress to the semi-finals of the Premier League Cup. Chelsea were 2-0 up before Leeds level. That was all inside half an hour. Zach Sturge won it shortly after the break. Jimmy J. Morgan and Danelle McNeely also scored. And Simon, you've been writing about Chelsea's top goal scorer.
Yeah, I just felt it was due a bit of love. And whether he was inspired by my piece, I do not know. But yeah, he's having a great season. And yeah, as people sort of talk to me, he's someone that has constantly felt like he's had a lot to prove, that he's had to fight against the odds. And I mean, it's a common story in terms of a Chelsea Academy player having to cope with a club that constantly signs players in your position, and you have to keep going, you have to keep that self-belief. And of course, Chelsea continues to spend fortunes on young players in his position, and yet here he is scoring goals for fun. I think that's 24 now for the season. A really impressive return. What happens to him next, we'll see in the summer. He'll only have 1 year left on his contract, but it would be a very strange move by Chelsea to not extend it. But will Danelle also sort of question what kind of pathway there is for him and what kind of trust Chelsea have in him? So some big discussions to be had. But from what I hear about him, I really like. I might have to follow his example, though. He bought himself a foam roller to improve his body, his conditioning. I think I probably could do with a foam roller,
you might need two or three, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, and 2-3 months using it. 2-3 years, actually.
Can I borrow it after you, though?
No, you wouldn't want to do that.
It's God, a really... this podcast has gone off in some weird way.
It certainly
Let's
has,
go back
it?
To my ex, anyway.
It's a really good piece. I've watched a lot of Danelle, obviously, in my role commentating on the Academy games this season. It's great to get some background in him. It's the sort of thing that Simon and The Athletic do so well. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't a subscriber currently. That's going to wrap up the show for today, though. Follow us on Twitter, now known as X, at SO Common Pod. Leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. It helps other Chelsea fans find the show, and it makes us feel good too. My thanks go to Simon, to Dom, to Jesse, to Lucy for putting all of this together, and to you for listening. Remember, back on Friday, because of that game on Thursday night, we'll deal with the fallout, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more in the world of Chelsea for us to talk about too. Join us for that if you can. For now, though, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.